What's up there, Sparky?
Blessed morning to you guys.
Blessed morning back at you, dog.
Captain Haw.
Jim in Chicago. Hey, Jimmy. What's up, buddy?
Hey, listen, David Haw on the air admitting that he left work early to go buy children's cereal. That's whack, bro.
That's whack, bro.
That is whack, bro. Jim, nicely done, buddy.
Dave Haw is just a bandwagon guy.
Hey, how you doing, huh?
Haw's telling me he eats Apple Jacks in the morning, nothing like another big bowl of Apple Jacks. I'm like, what? Haven't you heard? Sugar?
I went out to breakfast at Glenn's Diner. Phenomenal spot on Montrose. 28 different kinds of cereal, so I got a mixture of Apple Jacks and Frosted Flakes with blueberries and skim milk. Oh, what a breakfast.
Mm. Tastes kind of sweet.
See, why would you ever go out to breakfast and have cereal?
Sorry if that came off a little weird.
Amazing Apple Jacks at Glenn's? They've got Glenn's has a tremendous menu of the Apple Jacks. That's the only time that's ever been ordered there or anywhere, for that matter. Congratulations.
Obviously, it's been ordered more because they keep restocking the cereal.
Sitting here, listening to y'all show, eating a big bowl of Apple Jacks.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, baby, it's on!
From the seventh floor of the Tribune Towers.
Boy, this has been tremendously tremendous.
Downtown Chicago.
Chicago! Bolchik scores! Scores! Beauty!
Come on, sucker.
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Let's get it on.
It's the Cap and Haw Show.
Everyone has to do their job.
We're going
to
ball until we fall.
That's a shot and a beer.
Do your job.
That's the Hazleton way.
Let's begin now.
Yes!
Together again, get my guy back, David Haw, back in the studio. I'm David Kaplan. He's the lead columnist for the Tribune. He'll be at the game tonight. I'll have Sports Talk Live that you'll be a part of
tonight.
That's
right.
At the United Center. Looking forward to that. Game 3, Blackhawks and Ducks. Cap'n Haw's on the air on CSN, WGN+. Mike Jacobson, our executive producer. Matt Rooney, our associate producer. And Pat Gastel is our director. Welcome back, buddy.
Morning, Cap. Good to be back. And for the record, it was fueled by Golden Grahams this morning, not Apple Jacks.
There you go. I'm sure your wife was thrilled.
I don't know. Well, she's still sleeping. I don't know what my wife's at 5:45. She's still in bed. It's a little father-son bonding time. Get the kid ready for school. Eat your sugary cereal. Get on your way. That's the way it works in my house in the morning. So definitely back. Definitely the alarm went off this morning, and you're like, what? Really?
I'm back at it.
Really? Okay, but yes, back at it tonight. Looking forward to game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. And I do mean game 4 because they've already played 3 games, the equivalent. It was a doubleheader, essentially, the other night. When the time you got out of there, we're 3 minutes and 48 seconds away from playing 2 entire games.
Crazy.
And we will talk about what to expect tonight. But I do want to go back, Cap, because I have been gone for a few days and was traveling yesterday while you and Carm, who capably sat in here for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, talked about the game. But I got to take you back into the locker room, the dressing room, as they refer to it in hockey terms.
The room
after the game. Because I think there's sometimes in seasons and teams that you cover – and sports that you remember certain moments about certain seasons and certain runs, certain victories. For instance, 2006, the Bears. And I'm not equating this. I'm not saying the Hawks have won anything yet, okay? They tied a series.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the Western Conference Finals. It's 1-1. Game 3 tonight's going to be terrific. But when the Bears won the NFC Championship in 2006, you think back to that season. I don't remember every game. I'm not going to be able to recite chapter and verse of everything. I'm not Les Grobstein. Okay, I wish I had that kind of memory. I don't. But I can tell you moments. I can tell you certain things about it. I remember
I have that memory, so does that mean I'm Les Grobstein?
You're sort of a different version. You're a little different version of a grobber. Nothing against the grobber. I mean, I respect people
love the grobber
who can remember chapter and verse. I remember from 2006, the Bears run, being in that locker room after they beat the Arizona Cardinals and came back and won a game they had no business winning. And I remember the euphoria, and I remember the delirium, and I remember certain things at certain people's lockers.
24-23, Monday Night Football,
yes.
Punt return for Devin Hester.
Yes.
And the
Mike
speech
Brown.
From Olin Krutz at halftime.
Yes. All those things happened. All those things.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Made an indelible mark at seeing how they celebrated that victory. So I think that about this run, this series, what I'm going to remember most, and heck, we're 2 games in. Who knows what's going to happen tonight, the rest of this series. Being in that dressing room at, 1:20 Chicago time Wednesday morning, and, okay, so real quick, take a spin around the room. There's Andrew Shaw, Reporters surrounding him. He's loving the attention.
Now, how do you determine going to the press room where Joel is?
Well, you can do both.
You can do both. Because in the NBA, you can't.
Right. Well, it's tough. But you can do both. You get to the dressing room first, and you walk in there, and there's Andrew Shaw already holding court with a smile on his face, loving the attention, explaining the headbutt. And using every soccer one-liner and every sort of connection, every sort of explanation that tries to justify why it should have been a goal. And he knows that he's just you know, pulling people's chain. And he's loving the attention. You got Corey Crawford in the corner stoically just explaining how he's just so tired and it was just another game. And he felt like it was the longest game. And he's talking in a monotone voice. And you got this guy just is just smooth as they come.
Dude, you just saved 60 shots.
But acknowledging, Cap, that he does feel some cramping. And he knows that physically this is different. I don't usually feel cramping after one game. That to me was interesting.
Do guys get IVs like they do in football? I remember football.
Good question. I don't know. Probably. You would think so, right? Why is hockey different? So Corey Crawford's, you know, acknowledging cramps, taking the attention as it comes, the waves of reporters' questions. Patrick Sharp, you know, kind of sitting there incredulous at what had just happened, telling me that, you know, as well as Crawford played, he got the belt. And then he tells me, well, Crawford got the belt, received it, thanked everybody, said, now this is Marcus Kruger's. I'm going to give this to Krugs.
Pretty good.
And he thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was pretty cool for Sharp to offer that.
And Kruger said, thank you, but you really deserve it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's what happens on good teams. There's enough credit to be shared and go around. And then, and you'll love this, Cap, because, and Carmel accused me of having the man crush on Tavo. But Tavo, they got Tavo to come in to talk to. There's a lot of media. But I think there was someone specifically there for Tavo, maybe from Finland. I don't know. But Tavo looked like a kid at a movie fan at the Oscars. It just looked like sort of like he's looking around and not that he was – it just looked like he was soaking it all in because this was an exciting moment where they had just been through. And he was like – he looked like a kid who thought this is all pretty cool. And it was. It was a very cool scene. And
he looks like he's adjusting. Physical as it is, he looks like he is going to be a monster. And so I asked this question. I'll ask you. Going back to last summer – knowing the impact Ryan Kesler has on the Anaheim Ducks, how he tries to impose his physicality on the Blackhawks, if you could make the trade last summer that was reportedly on the table, Teuvo Teravainen for Ryan Kesler, do you do it?
Was it one for one?
Hawks may have thrown a pick or something in.
That's a really tough question. That's a really tough question.
Because I originally thought your window opportunity to win is right now and he's what you need. That said, I think that the best way to sustain what you've got is to have youthful, good players. I don't know if I'd have made that trade.
I think you can win without them. You know, you're where you want to be, Cap, and you didn't have to trade for Ryan Kesler. So I think the obvious answer would be no, I would not have made that deal. Because what are you missing?
But if you don't win and he ends up being a big factor the rest of the way, and then you look back, you go, we should have had him.
If you don't win, you don't win. But if you don't win, you were still in a position to win, if you know what I mean. And if you don't win moving forward, you're in a better position to keep winning. Does that make any sense? Because long-term, Tavo is going to be a guy that you're going to rely upon to have more Western Conference Finals. And Kesler, too, but the age disparity makes it think like, geez, you know, this guy's only 20.
Right.
And he looks like he belongs.
He looks like he's going to be a monster.
Can he play
player.
Defense?
Yeah, exactly. Steve Conroy joins us, 940, CSN Chicago Blackhawks analyst, former NHL defenseman. Jed Hoyer, Cubs GM, will be with us at 1040. And at 1110, Howard Griffith, Big Ten Network college football analyst, former Illini star. Let me just tell you, and I said this to the superiors around here, I am not friends with Chan and Ryan. We're acquaintances in the business. I'm not like I have this deep relationship with her.
Oh, that's good.
This is totally an unbiased, just professional to professional. She is killing this beat, doing an unbelievably great job. And I said to one of the bosses here, who will remain nameless, you better understand how good that girl is. She's phenomenal.
It's nice
she
you say.
She set the standard on this story.
It's nice of you to say. She's a pro, and this is a story that deserves the kind of attention she's giving it. So there's some troubling allegations. This is going to get worse, I think, before it gets better.
Well, you weren't back yesterday. Mike Thomas went on the score with Mully and Hanley.
I heard about it.
Was not good.
I heard about it.
If he's going to go on, he can't handle it like he did. Hide behind this privacy thing, and then don't go on.
What did you think he hid behind the most? The fact that he couldn't reveal personal details
about
it?
Well, it's an investigation, and I'm not part of it anymore. Then you shouldn't be on.
What I'm interested in is if he wants to do that, and I think this is the bigger picture question we can talk to Howard about, to what degree do you hold accountable an athletic director, an administrator, when his department looks like it's in the state of ruin that it's in?
Well,
because you cannot have these kind of this climate with two separate individual programs. One, you can say, okay, well, this just—
rogue coach.
But I don't know what's happening in Champaign, and I think, again, that's why it's an important investigation, important story to continue on.
Whether Mike is at fault at all or not, if a team doesn't play well, what do they say? Can't fire 25 players, you can fire the manager or the coach. Same deal down there.
Nobody's going to hold him responsible and say he's at fault for the behavior of coaches and the abusive tendencies that they may have been proven to have. But you do have to hold someone accountable. That's what you're talking about, and I think that's the appropriate way to look at this. So, yeah, we're going to talk to Howard at 11:10. You know, I'm glad we have Jed today because the Cubs continue to be interesting, as well as the White Sox. But I think that the way the Cubs have handled themselves the past week, especially with their pitching staff.
Proactive.
It's good to have the GM on today.
And I will tell you, I'm going to ask him, first question, is this come faster than you thought it was? Going into, you know, maybe a year ago, did you look at it and go, yeah, we're getting there, and all of a sudden now we wake up, it's almost June, and like, oh my goodness, we might be able to play postseason baseball.
I want to talk NFL, rules changes. I think we want to talk about Steph Curry, and a question I want to ask Blackhawks fans. So, hockey guys, hockey people, Mike Babcock going to Toronto. It's a pretty good contract.
8 years, $50 million.
That's a lot of dough.
So how much is the letter Q worth?
Yes. Because I don't know if you're paid attention, but I am. And the Stanley Cup count in the last 10 years.
2-1.
Yeah. Q's winning. What's he worth?
And if you go over a 10-year, just give him 5 years. He's won two in the last five of seven in the Western Conference.
Just win game three.
And I think we'll—
don't look too far ahead.
And I think we're going to disagree on the Steph Curry stuff. I think. We'll see.
I think you underestimate me sometimes.
Yeah, probably do. The Illinois Craft Brewers Guild is proudly celebrating the 6th Annual Chicago Craft Beer Week. Hashtag CCBW. Now through Sunday, each year Chicago comes together to celebrate 11 days of local craft beer. This Saturday, it all culminates with the city's largest craft beer party in the park hosted within the beautiful Wells Park, which is a huge 15-acre park located in the heart of Lincoln Square at Lincoln and Montrose. Chicago Craft Beer Week features over 90 venues with 400-plus events at 77 Chicago neighborhoods. It's right across the street from the new Lou Malnati's. Create your own CCBW schedule at Shy. That's pronounced Shy, but it's spelled C-H-I, beerweek.com. ShyBeerWeek.com, C-H-I-BeerWeek.com. If you're into craft beer, you'll love this week-long celebration. Sample all these delicious craft beers. And don't forget about the Wells Park Craft Beer Fest this Saturday. Chicago Craft Beer Week, sponsored by Goose Island, All Rise Brewing, Red Eye Chicago, Revolution Brewing, Draft Magazine, McCarb, Lakeshore Beverage, and Lagunitas. Take a time out. We'll come right back.
Now, more Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN+.
It was pretty interesting. I actually didn't know about that rule. I thought it might be a goal. I wasn't sure. I didn't celebrate or anything, but he's one of the best soccer players we've played before the game, so I can see him do some stuff like that.
Nicholas Holmerstrom, as one of our great callers like to call him. Nicholas Jalmerson discussing Andrew Shaw and the header that ended up in the back of the net and then was wiped out. And the amazing thing is, you're at the game. Mike and I are texting during the game. We're watching it on TV. The announcers thought it was good.
Well, I know they did.
They had no idea.
I heard that. But here's the thing, Cap. And Jalmerson also suggests that some players
didn't know the rule.
But Patrick Sharp, who I was talking to after the game, and I said to him, what was your reaction as soon as, you know, Shaw headbutted the puck through? He goes, well, I knew it wasn't going to count. I said, is that a rule that's pretty well known? Because there was some uncertainty. And
right.
I think it's understood why. You don't see it every day.
Right.
And he says, no, we knew. We knew. We just, he goes, some people, I said, how do you explain everyone's celebrating. He goes, some people just were hoping that maybe they would not call it, not notice or whatever, but we knew. Players know.
It's funny, Devontae Smith-Pelly, who used to play for Anaheim, where's he at now? Washington? Montreal. He got traded to the Canadiens at the deadline in a deal this year. Mm-hmm. Somebody tweeted at me yesterday, he's playing college hockey, and he goes up, boom, headbutts one in, and then they wipe the goal out, and he goes off on the official with a torrent of F-bombs. He didn't know the rule, he said.
I got to tell you, Cap, this is creating a generation now of kids who want to headbutt the puck through the net for a goal. And yesterday I come home, my son's playing hockey in the garage, you know, street hockey with the puck and the balls that he practices with and stick handling and all that. And he's practicing headbutting the ball through the goal. He's like doing the soccer move.
Well, it's his favorite player.
And, yeah, I know. So he's practicing the Shaw headbutt.
That is so funny.
And I guess that if Andrew Shaw figures if they're going to let him score with shin pads, why not use his helmet too?
It's funny.
But the rule is you cannot score with anything other than your stick.
Well, it can deflect off your shin pad.
Yeah, it can deflect. Like, you can't knowingly, consciously try to score with anything but your stick.
Correct.
And he did. I give him credit for trying. At that point in the game, do you blame anybody for trying to do anything possible to score
a
goal?
Okay, so let me ask you a question, and then we'll go right.
It wasn't cheating. It was just
okay.
It was just ingenious.
Carmen is sitting in your chair the other day.
Yeah.
He played in a competitive league he's in playing softball. There's men on base, game's tight, fly ball to deep right center. Guy goes out, tries to run it down, and he clearly drops it as he tries to sell the catch. There's only one umpire in like co-ed or men's softball, and he grabs it, holds it up, and the umpire calls the guy out.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen believes that the guy should have gotten up, thrown the ball in, and said to the ump, I didn't catch it. And I said, what? It's called gamesmanship, you goof.
Why would you do that?
Exactly. And he's like, you have no ethics then. And I'm like, it has nothing to do with ethics. If Andrew Shaw could get away with headbutting a puck and they don't call it.
Let me ask you, if you're game seven of the World Series and somebody, I mean, not that you're playing softball and it's a World Series, but come on. And you dive for a ball and the bases are loaded to preserve a victory and you trap it.
He thinks you should trap get up it. And say to the ump.
Oh, no, we're not going to take back the celebration. We didn't win because I trapped the ball, even though you called it out.
Right.
Give me a break.
I completely agree.
Come on, you need some sleep. You'd be getting up too early.
I killed him for it. All right, 312-35-2525. Do you think there'll be, I know Q said, you know, same lineup. Comiskey, he sounds like he's going to give more minutes to tonight.
Yeah, good old Comiskey.
Do you believe that there will be.
Going to park him in the lineup.
Any more. Of any lineup change at all to get fresh legs in. You know,
no.
Pat Boyle talked about it yesterday. Said, oh, you got Versteeg and Nordstrom. You could.
What aren't you getting? Who are you going to replace? That's what I would ask.
Just it's because guys are tired.
I think that's a valid, and it's easy for me to say. I didn't play, you know, 48 minutes on the ice or whatever. They just had 10 days off. I think what Joe Quenneville had to say is exactly right. I don't know that now you're worried about. Both teams had to endure this. You do have depth. Who would you change? Who are you going to bring in Chris Versteeg for? Somebody
right.
on the fourth line? That was your best line.
Correct.
You're going to replace somebody on the third line? Let's see. Sharp and Tavo. No.
I don't disagree.
Antoine Vermette? I don't think so. Not at this stage.
And I don't think Pat was saying they should. He just threw it out there and said.
It's a valid discussion point. I think the answer is no. Defensively, I mean, you don't have many other options.
Holmstrom is a great defenseman.
He is.
All right, how about this on the Corey Crawford front? Look, he struggled in the Nashville series. We can all agree with that.
And if you bring it up again in front of Corey Crawford, he's not going to agree with anything you say.
Correct.
I think he's so sick.
But
of
he's going to love the stats that Chris Kampka gave me yesterday, our great researcher at
bring
CSN. So Corey Crawford in 340-some overtime playoff minutes in his career. We can agree that's the highest leverage hockey you could play, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In 340-some minutes, Corey Crawford has a goals against average, I believe, of 1.55.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty damn good. 1.55. And if you take the Jonathan Quick numbers in less minutes and the Henrik Lundqvist, the King numbers, arguably the two best goalies in the NHL.
Okay, let's not do 340-some. Let's get your stats correct. Here's what you tweeted out.
Okay.
I got them for you. 347 minutes of overtime playoff hockey.
Yeah.
1.55 goals against. Yeah. Okay. Lundqvist, 322 with a 2.79, and that was before last night. Jonathan Quick, 241, 2.24.
What you're saying is. And look at the save percentage, 949 and 915 and 918.
So what you're saying is the guy who started the playoffs as a huge question mark.
The Achilles heel,
was,
so to speak.
Was yanked after one period of playoff hockey, mm-hmm. endured the Scott Darling ascension, mm-hmm. is back to being Corey Crawford.
Okay, so what
Because he's got a good team in front of him, too. That helps.
Okay.
But he rises to the occasion.
What was the score last two games ago? Rangers-Lightning. 6-2. And last night, 6-5.
6-5.
Okay, if Corey Crawford had given up 6-6, 12 goals in 2 days, every freaking person in town would be going, you got to play Darling.
So
the king.
So you want a piece of Lundqvist? Is that what you want?
I just want to fully let you know I am on the Corey Crawford bandwagon, have been since 2013 when I apologized to him.
Okay, but what today is, I'm just going to write this down. That's not the 19th. I wrote down 19th.
21st.
It's May 21st. Okay, you are on the bandwagon today.
No. Since I apologized to him after he won the cup in 13.
I'm just saying that I love your stats. I love your research. But if you're asking for Lundqvist in the next round, be careful what you wish for.
I'm not saying I want Lundqvist. I'm just saying people need to understand Corey Crawford's way better than they always give him credit for.
60 saves will get you that kind of praise. Yes.
9 a.m. hour, sponsored by Apt Electronics. ABT. Apt.com. Best people in the world. Ask for the great Steve Shapiro. Again, go to their website, aptabt.com. And don't forget, Sports Talk Live tonight from the United Center, 5:30. David Hall will be on that panel with Chris Cook and Mark Lazarus. Sox Cleveland tonight at 7. Cubs San Diego tonight, 7:30 pregame I'll have for you with Holly on CSN Plus. And Blackhawks postgame live with Patrick Boyle, Steve Conroy, Jamal Mayers tonight after the game on CSN. We'll take a timeout. We'll come right back. It's Cap and Haw back together here on CSN.
It's Cap and Haw.
I know you said you coach each game just to win that game, but big picture, how much concern do you have about the wear and tear factor on Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and those guys since they're taking on so much and paying a heavy physical toll?
I just had 10 days off, so I feel pretty good about it.
Are we to the point now in the playoffs where you just can't worry about that stuff? Is that what
I mean? Their defense played just about as many minutes as Dunks and Hammer or Siebes or whoever. But I mean, it's they're playing hockey and there's enough recovery time.
There's our guy, Q. You want to buy stock? Buy stock in him.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. It's skyrocketing.
What we call a blue chip stock. Kevin Hawk continues.
And I understand the discussion. I do. I wonder, is he Joel Thibodeau now? I mean, are we so...
We've got more than enough to win.
The minutes thing. I mean, it's both teams played 116 minutes and 12 seconds of hockey the other day. Mm-hmm. I know the Hawks are overly reliant on their top four defensemen.
Do you see how many minutes the top four defensemen played for Anaheim?
Thank you. They played a lot. I can't recite them chapter verse, but it's
Mid-40s.
Over 40, right?
Yeah.
There are situations in every season, in every walk of life, where you have to go above and beyond what you're normally asked to do it.
Correct.
That was what Game 2 was all about. So the right answer was exactly how Joel Quenneville replied to the question. They just had 10 days off. Mm-hmm. They're professional athletes. There's not anybody who's going to minimize the toll physically and even mentally that took on everybody who played in that game. But they are professional athletes. I think they'll be just fine.
By the way, last night, this is not hockey, but it fits as I'm just clicking on it here. Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta. How many minutes did LeBron play?
Oh, geez. 42.
38 minutes, and they won going away, so they pulled them late. 38 minutes. If we played Pau Gasol 38 minutes, people were like, oh, my God, his legs are going to fall off.
I think there's a transference of topics from once the Bulls are done now and you're worried about what's going on, now we have to kind of work it into hockey
Tristan
somehow.
Thompson played 42 minutes.
I don't know.
I mean, come on.
This is a good question we can ask Steve Conroy back in his day when we have him on at 9:40. Was there so much attention paid to guys' minutes played back in those days?
Doubtful.
I don't think so. I really don't. So anyway, back to the game at hand, the things that are interesting about tonight. I thought that Clayton Stoner was going to be disciplined.
At least fined.
I thought that he might be fined. If right after it happened, Cap, you had to wonder if there was a game in it. I was stunned that it was only a two-minute penalty. I thought that either the cross-check of Kruger, you know, the shove from behind, seeing the way his head hit the boards, and then compounding one dumb move and cheap move with another by punching Patrick or Andrew Shaw
right in the face,
even though he's as punchable as they come in the NHL, that you would have expected more than the league is not going to do anything, according to Chris Cook. And I'm a little surprised at that.
It's crazy. The league will not discipline him in any way. Mike Milbury crushed him on the between period stuff and yesterday on Sports Talk Live.
And when I was listening to the game, as I'm watching it, and John Wideman, the great WGN play-by-play guy, said that, and friend of Bruce Boudreau.
Does he have a voice left?
He's got to.
Holy smokes.
He's all right.
He's so good.
He's so good. He's so good.
He got so awesome on the game-winning goal.
When Kruger went into the boards and hit his head, he goes, it looks like he might have broken. He could have broken his neck. He said something to that effect, and he's right. I mean, it looked bad. Kruger didn't miss a shift. That's one tough player. And he...
That's why you got to get him re-signed.
Well, yeah. Slow down. Just enjoy the series. Don't worry about next year. Don't worry about the salary cap. Just slow down. Okay, it's okay. It's okay to savor the series that's ahead, even the next one.
Phenomenal.
Anyway, by the way, we have a texter who asked a good question. And I wasn't around yesterday. I was airborne. But did yesterday you call Lundqvist the best goalie in the league?
Yeah, I said he is believed by the experts is exactly how I put it. As the king, that's his nickname.
Well, you're an expert.
I'm not an NHL expert, but he is perceived.
Can we get that on tape? Can we cut it? Cut that? Bring that back? Okay.
But I do play a GM in four sports 5 days a week on radio and TV. He is perceived to be the best goalie in the world.
Agreed.
He's the king for a reason.
Looking forward to talking to Eddie, who's going to be on the show tomorrow.
Correct.
Calling the game tonight, Eddie and Doc back tonight on NBC, which is great for everybody. To see what he thinks has gone wrong in that series, if anything's gone wrong at all. I mean, Tampa Bay is high scoring. You knew this was. You knew they were capable of this. But Lundqvist looking as ordinary as he has looked.
The game winning goal. Did you see the game winning goal?
Yeah.
Okay, that can't go in.
How can that happen?
That can't go in.
Didn't it look
and if
like
that's
he was
Corey
just...
Crawford, we're going crazy.
Yeah,
that's unfair.
Yeah, we're going.
It happens.
2013 was a fluke, and bring on Scott Darling and all those things.
Yeah.
It looked like Lundqvist wasn't even paying attention. And just right by him.
And he just sunk his head like, you got to be kidding me.
I was slipping around, but that was one exciting hockey game. I was definitely interested in how quickly Tampa Bay can strike. It's like lightning.
It's like lightning.
It's like lightning.
It's like lightning.
But they are. They're quick strike artists. They're very good. Stamkos, unbelievable talent. That's a fun team to watch. I don't know. I mean,
it's a ballroom blitz, man. Love that song. Let's go back to the phones.
You and Joe Madden?
Yeah, absolutely. You got it. I love two-out runs, man. Kevin in Mundelein, welcome to Cap and Haw.
Hey, you guys. I just want to say thanks for taking my call, and you guys are the greatest radio guys around.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
I enjoy your show. And I was the guy that had the hip replacement about 5 weeks ago. I called in, and I was talking about how because of you guys and the Fox, we all got over our pain, and I'm walking again with a new hip. But just to talk about the Hawks, I think Andrew Shaw is the heart and soul of that team, and he motivates everybody. He is an old-school, tough, scrappy guy, and what he lacks in talent, he makes up for in hustle. And if he would have just stood still and let that puck deflect off his head, it would have been a good goal. That's all I've got to say, and thanks for your radio show. You guys are great.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Kevin.
If he would have stood still, I don't know that it would have bounced off. I mean,
it just hits him,
yeah.
I think it drops down.
Yeah.
He had to direct it in.
You got to kind of, and he might have tried to kick it with nobody looking. I think it was an obvious attempt to direct the puck where it went. I just can't believe that of all the great reflexes that Freddie Anderson had, the other night and how good he has played.
53 saves in that game.
He was terrific.
Yep.
That he didn't stop that one. You know? That was – there. He must have just not seen it. It must have just been an awkward bounce. I don't know, but it was
– Well, it Kane unusual. Shot it, and it shot up in the air, and then boom! It was
– I guess you don't expect a player to do that.
Correct.
But he's exactly right, Kevin, about Andrew Shaw. His worth – to the Blackhawks is not in the 20 to 25 goals per season. It's not the guy that you have to worry about necessarily, you know, getting in the open ice. That's not his game. He's all about heart, effort, intensity. He's a hockey player.
He is. I don't know if I call him the heart and soul because I think that's Jonathan Taves and Duncan Keith, the guys. But I would say he is one of those glue guys that keeps everything together.
But as much as Joel Quenneville juggles the roster in the postseason, juggles the lines and mixes in and mixes this and that, you really don't hear too much about Andrew Shaw being taken out or being, you know, even considered to be being replaced.
How many goals do you think he scored this year?
I think he had a down year offensively coming off a 20-goal season last year. I think he had maybe 16.
15.
15?
15, 11 assists, 26 points at 79
yeah,
games.
Yeah, I'm pretty up on the Andrew Shaw offensive numbers.
That's
because,
your son's favorite player.
It becomes a regular thing. But he is definitely valuable, and I think as a guy, Matt Rooney, he could say he's an NHL hockey expert. He knows the league, and he's right. Andrew Shaw is much more effective playing forward than he is playing center.
By the way, Matt Rooney went on the somebody has you tweet in your pick who's going to score the game-winning goal for either team. John Buchagras from ESPN. And Rooney had the Marcus Kruger. That was
did he really?
Pick. Yeah.
He called Krugs?
He did.
I would not have called Krugs.
Did you have Krugs and Getzlaff? I can't remember.
Seabrook's always a safe bet. Yeah, and Seabrook was involved. You know that was his only – I don't think he got a credit for a shot on goal, but that was his only shot on goal of the night.
Yeah, and do you know that if you watch the replay of it, that puck's in midair when he shoots it.
Yeah.
Midair.
Yeah.
It's not on the ice. It's there, and he goes, boom.
Right.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's Mr. Overtime, though.
Hey, get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curve 4K Ultra HD TV at Apton Glenview. With the Samsung 4K Curve Ultra HD, you get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come into app today, see the complete selection of Samsung electronics, or call them up at 847-544-2228. 847-544-2228. For complete satisfaction, free delivery, a better experience, shop where we shop. It's Apt. It's A-B-T. Apt.com. Ask for the great Steve Shapiro at Pleasing People since 1936. Speaking of Steve, the Silver Fox, Steve Conroy, will join us next on Cap and Haw.
This is Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
Have you guys broken down the game with video? And if you have, did you have to hit rewind a couple times with the headbutt thing?
I did everything. We just watched. I watched the whole game on the plane right here. That's took a little while.
There's Coach Q breaking down that three-plus hour game that we re-aired on CSN yesterday.
Three-plus?
I think just the play time.
Okay.
They said it's like 3.5 hours.
All right, because started at 8:15, ended at 1:08.
Yeah, I think if you boil it down, take all the between period stuff and commercials
out. So you don't think Q watched for the TV commentary?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's a slow plane.
Probably
it took
not.
That long to get back
to
Cali.
I think the only TV commentary he listens to is Blackhawks postgame live.
Yeah.
In between periods.
I would.
With Stephen Mark Conroy, the former defenseman, doing great work at CSN, and he joins us now. Steve Conroy, good morning. How are
you, Steve?
Buddy?
David, I'm doing great. How are you guys? Thanks for the plug.
Absolutely. Guys doing great work. It's must-watch TV even at 1 o'clock in the morning.
You know, I looked up in the studio, and, you know, we've got that digital clock. It was 2:15 when we officially went off of – we did a little hit on Sports Night Central, so it was – it was 2:15 when we walked off the stage.
All right, so I was listening to your compatriot, Jamal Mayers, this morning, pretty highly critical of Kimmo Tiiminen. Wouldn't play him. What would you do? You were an NHL defenseman. You got 4 points. Five defensemen if Comiskey's the other guy. What would you do?
Well, I feel bad for Kimmo. I mean, you know, this is, we all know it's his last season, and he'd love to win another Stanley Cup, but, you know, I think unfortunately he's putting the Blackhawks in kind of a tough situation every time he's out there. Now, he's not forcing the coach's hands, There's just not a lot of other options for Chicago. You know, they with David David Runblad and the game he had when he came in was not very pretty. They just called a couple of guys up from the minors, Svedberg being one of them. I don't know if that's an option either. So, I think you've got to limit his minutes, and I think what you've got to do, too, is take a serious look at giving Kyle Komisky some more minutes. I really liked his game last game. I thought, you know, in limited playing time, and I think he ended up with 16 to 18 minutes. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he showed me a lot. I mean, he had a couple of turnovers, but who doesn't have a turnover? I mean, I looked at that second period, and Johnny Oduya turned the puck over twice about midway through the second period, and that really led to an onslaught for the rest of that period by Anaheim. But he recovered nicely. He really had a strong game, but you know, aside from those two turnovers. So, you know, getting back to Komisky, I'd like to see him play a little more, and, you know, maybe all of a sudden you can play Chemo in offensive situations, and he's only going to get 5, 6, 7 minutes, but, you know, you don't have to worry about him starting in his own zone. And I think that's where he gets into trouble is when he starts, you know, running around in his own zone, and obviously he's lost his stride, and I think you just have to really protect him as far as his minutes go.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve, and I think Komisky did play better maybe than people expected. I think he represented himself fine and didn't do anything to be replaced. With Timonen, I think that you have a situation where, you know, what's the alternative? I don't know that you want to go with two young players or untested guys like Runblad and Komisky. I don't know that you have many other options. This is the roster you have. You have to make the best of it. The thing I want to ask you about is the emphasis on the first four guys, and we break down their minutes, and we ask Joel questions that are valid questions about their stamina coming off a game like that. Was it this kind of emphasis during your career on minutes played and worrying about how guys recovered from playing too much time on the ice, because we do it a lot here?
Yeah, you know, it really wasn't, Dave. That's a great question. I played in a four overtime game back in 1986 with the New York Islanders, and it was a game seven, and they didn't even keep, well, they probably did keep the stats, but the players never saw them as far as how much time you spent on the ice. And, you know, we it was a seven-game series, so that was game seven. We basically played two games in almost another period. And 2 days later, we were in Philadelphia starting a series there. So I think maybe we make a little too much of it because, listen, I know our top four played a lot of minutes. Anaheim, Francois Beauchemin ended up playing, I think, a little north of 46 minutes. And he's an older defenseman. He's a guy who's, I want to say he's at least 33, maybe even 35 years of age. So, you know, those are tough minutes on him. I think most of the other guys were under 40 minutes. They're six. You know, they try to spread out the minutes as much as they can. So, but the other thing to keep in mind is when you lose a game like that, maybe a game you should have won, you start to feel a little more tired. And and as taxing as it is on our top four, those six guys over there are feeling it too. So, the one thing I love about our squad, though, Dave, is the fact that they are in really good shape. And Paul Goodman, who's the strength and conditioning coach for the Blackhawks, really deserves a lot of credit. I mean, you know, Duncan Keith is world-class regardless, but these other guys really work at what they do, and they're in fantastic shape. And I think they're going to bounce back just fine. And I was reading an article this morning that, you know, after the previous two long overtime games against Nashville, the two overtime and three overtime, we ended up losing that next game. I think we're going to come out really strong in this first period, game three at the United Center. I think they're going to use the fans. I think they're going to use the excitement of that thrilling win in game two, and I think they're really going to try and put the Anaheim Ducks down.
Talking to Steve Conroy, the Silver Fox over at Comcast Sportsnet. All right, Stevie, let's talk about this matchup from a different perspective, because I keep hearing 71 hits and the Hawks are going to get worn out by the hitting. But I talked to Mike Milbury last night. And I said, well, okay, the Hawks are getting hit 71 times, but you can't tell me that the guys who are doing the hitting aren't also feeling some of that. And he completely agreed. He goes, it's overstated to say that the Chicago Blackhawks are going to wear out because they're getting pounded on, because the guys doing the pounding, they're going to feel it almost as much. Do you agree?
Well, yeah. It's not a one-way street. I mean, yeah, it energizes you when you put a big hit on a guy, but, you know, you're receiving, you know, some of the brunt of that force too. And, you know, sometimes if you miss a guy, if it's not a clean hit, you end up eating the boards. The boards aren't moving, and that can really hurt you. So, yeah, I totally agree. I do think, though, that the hitting thing helps build momentum because, you know, listen, you can't go out there and score every shift. But you can go out there and do good things, and one of those good things is getting on the body. And they've done it pretty effectively. But, you know, that being said, I love the way our defensemen never back away from a situation where they know they're going to get hurt, but they're going to still make that right play, and they'll take the hit to make the right play.
Now, Eddie Olczyk did say to me this morning, the team that's doing the hitting, Anaheim, that's how they're used to playing, so it's not as tough on them as it might
be
the team getting hit. So he makes a great point.
Well, he does, because that is their MO. I mean, they're a big, heavy team, and much like, you know, the St. Louis Blues, they were the same way. And I can remember last year everyone was concerned about, you know, St. Louis running Chicago out of the building, you know, and after two games they were up 2-0, but I can distinctly remember game three, Blackhawks didn't change at all. In fact, I think they almost goaded St. Louis into taking themselves out of position to make the hit so that, you know, they could make that play, get a guy out of position, and then all of a sudden, you know, if you can escape that hit and get around the guy, you know, all of a sudden it becomes a 4-on-3 or maybe a 3-on-2. So there's some danger in running around and trying to put guys through the boards, and I think the Blackhawks are smart enough to take advantage of that. And I keep going back to it, but I think the biggest key is not being afraid, and they're not afraid of getting hit, and they'll make those plays. And, you know, Patrick Kane, I think, is a great example. He'll skate to traffic to make a play, and that's how he fools a lot of guys. You know, as a defender, you expect a guy to go wide to look for open ice. He'll try and split the D, and sometimes, you know, you're not really expecting that, and that's how he exploits it.
So how does you mentioned Patrick Kane. How does he get untracked, Steve, and what have the Ducks done to kind of keep him in check for the first two games? Because it is a Western Conference Finals. We have seen him rise to the occasion at this stage before. We're so used to watching it in Chicago, and yet he's been pretty quiet.
Well, you know, he has, and I think Jonathan Toews has too. So, you know, credit Anaheim, their forwards, and especially their defensemen. I think, you know, if Kaner scores that first goal in game one on the first shot that he has that Frederik Andersen stopped with his paddle, I think that changed everything. I think, you know, if he scores a goal early in the series, he starts to feel good about himself, and it changes his mindset and it changes his game. I think he's just fine. I think he had a few more looks, a few more shots last game. It'll come. You know, and when those goals come, especially for number 88, he's one of those guys that they come in barrelfuls. He kind of feeds off of that, his own momentum, you know, that good feeling you get when you score a goal. So I think he's just got to keep shooting, keep going to those areas. And, you know, I know our power play was very effective last game. They scored on their first two power play opportunities. He wasn't really a big part of those goals. I think if he gets going on the power play, and a lot of coaches have said it, that sparks their 5-on-5 play. You know, you get your five best players on the ice. If they get feeling good about themselves with a good power play or a power play point, a power play goal, that normally kind of jump starts their 5-on-5 game, and that gets them going. So I think that's all it's going to take is, you know, a good primary assist or a nice goal, and he'll break out of it.
We're talking to Steve Conroy from Comcast Sportsnet. Okay, David asked you the great question about minutes. I want to test your memory, okay?
Yep.
The Easter Epic, the nickname given to the 1987 Stanley Cup playoff game between the Islanders and the Washington Capitals. Did you get a penalty in that game?
You know, I know I had an assist. I will say yes, I got a penalty.
You did at the 7:36 mark of the first period, Steve Conroy. In the second period, who scored when you assisted, and who got the other assist?
Wow, I know Brian Trache scored. I had an assist. I don't know who got the secondary assist.
The score that you assisted on was Flatley.
Uh-oh.
Conroy and Trottier, the assists.
Oh, okay. So, see, I've got it backwards.
And then you got a second assist in the third period. Kerr and Conroy assisting on a Trottier goal.
Oh, okay. That's the one I say. Oh, so I had two helpers in that game?
Two helpers.
Wow.
How about that?
But that's what made it the epic.
And who were the goaltenders in the game?
Oh, it was Bob Mason for the Washington Capitals and Kelly Rudy, who I think it was a record. I don't know if it
still is.
He made 73 saves.
That's correct.
73
shots stopped over seven periods.
My gosh.
Seven periods, including 50 straight from the end of the second period. His 73 saves. Still an NHL playoff record, one better than Jean-Sebastien Jaguar in 03 and Roberto Luongo in 07, who saved 72. Bob Mason stopped 54 until Pat LaFontaine beat him to end the marathon.
Well, you know, you're bringing back great memories, Cap, but one other thing on that Patty LaFontaine goal, and there's a connection to Chicago there. Gordy Dineen, Kevin Dineen, the assistant coach for the Blackhawks, who runs the forwards, runs the power play. Gord Dineen's brother, who's a defenseman, really made that play. He did an awful lot on that in the fourth overtime to make sure that he got the puck to the net. Patty LaFontaine kind of picked up. It was very similar to the Kruger goal, although a little different position. Patty was in front of the net, but kind of a broken play shot from the point. Patty jumps on the loose puck and scores. So, yeah, Gord Dineen, great guy, as is Kevin Dineen, and that's the
Chicago. Dineen and Leiter with the assist.
But, Steve, the big question, do you remember what you had after the game to eat?
Well, here's the funny story, Dave. So we're waiting for a charter to come in from Long Island. It was fogged in Long Island. The plane didn't get to us till 7 a.m.
Oh.
So we're waiting at a hangar for, like, literally 5-6 hours. Got there at 7 a.m. We went home, showered, got some more clothes. I want to say we bused to Philadelphia because Long Island to Philadelphia isn't that bad. And we were back on a bus at about 11:30, 12 o'clock to go to Philadelphia, and then we played the next day. So,
did you win that first game?
No, we didn't. You know, we gave up two shorthanded goals, and we lost game one. But that series did go seven games. Mike Keenan was the head coach in Philadelphia there, and they did go on to the finals to play the Edmonton Oilers. So,
by the way, a big name was refereeing the game. Do you remember who it was?
Wow, was it Paul Stewart?
Andy Van Hellemond.
Oh, sure.
With John D'Amico and Ron Finn. And now, of course, there's four officials on the ice, only three back then. Hey, before we let you go, going into tonight's game, how do you think guys' legs will be right at the start? And Corey talked, I think, with David about cramping up a little bit. Do you guys take IVs during marathon-type games like that?
You know, we didn't obviously back in the day, but I think they are now. I know certainly after games, especially at home, I've heard of Blackhawk players going on IVs, replace fluid, replace, you know, minerals, electrolytes, whatever they put in those bags of fluid. But, you know, I can remember cramping up in a game. I think it was Palmieri we saw in that, I think it was early, it was first or second overtime. A couple of times it looked like he was cramping up on the ice. I think early in this game might not be a problem, but obviously, you know, if this thing goes to another overtime, that's when you're really going to see guys tested, and that could be a possibility. But, you know, the Blackhawks, not only great training staff, they've got doctors there the whole time, and they can monitor those types of things, and they administer those IVs to the guys. So if it needs be, if that has to happen, it's a little easier when you're at home in your own building, and they can certainly hook up to an IV.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight.
Hey, guys. And, Cap, thanks for all those memories. Where'd you get all that stuff?
A little thing called Google. I'll see you at the office later.
Hey, sounds great. Have a good one, guys.
All right, talk to you. There he is, the great Steve Conroy. Does wonderful work.
Look at you, little Google master.
How about that? That's pretty
hockey
cool
historian.
Stuff.
Imagine being part of that game, getting done with it, the exhaustion, going back, and your charter plane is not there, and you have to wait 5 hours for.
Oh.
You're waiting 5 hours, and then you take a bus. Oh.
And I'll bet that there was nothing said about that in the media today. Be tweeted.
Oh,
be
my
all
gosh.
Over the place.
It'd be twit pics everywhere.
The company that didn't get the plane there would be getting
blasted. Oh, my gosh.
Blasted.
Fire the general manager.
It's brutal. What kind of traveling secretary we got here?
How many minutes are they going to play tonight?
312-235-2525. Again, after the game goes final tonight, while David is.
Or tomorrow.
Typing, and I'm doing Cubs postgame with Holly on CSN Plus.
Yeah.
Make sure that you turn on main channel, CSN, and watch Pat Boyle, Steve Conroy, and Jamal Mayers. 312-235-2525. We'll get to Glenn in North Riverside, Don and McHenry. Don't forget, coming up on the show at 10:40, Jed Hoyer, Cub GM, and Howard Griffith at 11:10 with this exciting expanding scandal at the University of Illinois. It's expanding. It's a scandal that has to be investigated.
Okay. That's good.
We'll come right back.